This is Boston Public Radio. I'm Emily Rooney. Well, Governor Deval Patrick recently tapped Steve Tompkins to be the next Suffolk County Sheriff. He's replacing outgoing Sheriff Andrea Cabral, who's leaving the post to be Secretary of Public Safety. Unlike Cabral, Steve Tompkins has absolutely no law enforcement background. He's experienced it really by proxy. He's been Andrea Cabral's spokesperson, and then he was an aide to her as well. But this week, when pressed on this, Governor Bob Patrick said, well, for those of you who are criticizing me for making a political appointment, that's correct. It is a political appointment. Here with me in Studio 3 to talk about that appointment is Boston Herald reporter Dave Wedge, who's absolutely outraged. And I'm thinking, this is refreshingly honest. He admits it.
Yeah. I mean, it's nice to hear a little bit of honesty from the governor. I guess that's the benefit of being in your last term. You know, he can do that. But yeah, I mean, it's pretty clear that it is a political hire. You know, I would venture.
Aren't most jobs in government?
Unfortunately, you know, we were just talking. I was talking with your producer Edgar back there, and you know, if Scott Brown somehow ends up being the governor, I'm sure he'll be making some political hires. And
sure. Then
we were talking about the Barnstable sheriff hired Jeff Perry. You know,
yeah, remember
that whole
that?
Thing? So it happens all the time. Doesn't make it right though.
And one of the things all kidding aside is that the governor said in the wake of the fiasco we had with the drug lab and then with Mary something Heffernan, what's her first name?
Yep, Mary Beth Heffernan.
Appointing somebody who had a terrible driving record, that you had to take these law enforcement positions seriously. I mean, they are the chief executives overseeing, you know, the state crime labs and all these other, you know, the drug lab, all these things. These people should have some law enforcement experience. Although you can't say he has zero.
He's been a spokesman for the sheriff. He's been a political aide to the sheriff. That's what he's been. And, you know, Steve Tompkins is a very smart guy, a fellow Boston College alum, so I like him because of that. same with Sheriff Cabral. He may prove to be the best sheriff we've ever seen. But the fact of the matter is that, you know, the question needs to be asked of the governor and needs to be pondered, is this the best we can do?
Yeah. Well, I've got him coming on tomorrow on Greater Boston. But, I mean, would Steve Murphy have been better? I mean, he ran for sheriff.
Right.
He wanted to be sheriff. He said he was unclear whether he would have taken it if offered to it this time around. But would he have been better qualified?
Well, I don't know that. I mean, but that clearly would have been a political hire as well. I mean, Steve Murphy would have got that job because he helped the governor get elected in 2006, whenever it was. So, you know, Steve Tompkins definitely knows the jail. He knows how it works. He sat next to Andrea Cabral and watched how she does her job for the last 10 years.
Yeah.
But that
something
said,
to be
you know,
said to that. That,
there is definitely something to be said. You know, it's not like he's completely
inexperienced. No, because you look at somebody like Seti Warren, who was an aide to Senator John Kerry. Mm-hmm. I mean, it rubbed off on him.
Mm-hmm.
And he learned a tremendous amount. You could say, well, he was a fairly low-level aide. He came out, he's now mayor of Newton.
Yeah. Well,
right out of that job.
Some would argue he shouldn't be, you know, but that's another conversation.
But
Steve definitely has a lot of experience in that particular agency. But that said, you know, law enforcement positions are pretty particular. You know, he has no experience with dealing directly with prisoners. You know, is he qualified to negotiate with that union, which is one of the most powerful unions in the city? Is he qualified to set jail policy and procedures with dealing with the inmates? Again, a very delicate situation. A mistake could mean someone's life.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, the other question that I have is, you know, and I asked the governor yesterday at the press conference, what other sort of folks did you consider?
Mm-hmm.
Did you consider law enforcement folks or jail administrators? And he said, yeah, but this is the right guy. So, you know, the governor's a pretty smart guy. I'm not going to tell him he's wrong, but time will tell. You know?
Do you think Steve Tompkins lobbied for the job? Did Governor Deval Patrick already have him in his sights because he knew him, maybe because Andrea Cabral recommended him?
I'd say probably a little of both. I mean, a little of all that. I mean, I'd say, you know, Steve Murphy was in the running from what I understand, and that, you know, there's a real dislike between Andrea Cabral and Steve Murphy.
He ran for her job.
He ran for a job.
If I were the governor, that wouldn't have stopped me.
Well, then there's the whole conspiracy theory about the mayor, which I wrote about. You know, if Steve Murphy had got the job, Michael Flaherty would have been automatically put back on to the city council.
Is that true?
Because the
next to the last most
he
votes.
He was the person who...
They wouldn't have had a special election?
No, it's an automatic... It's a weird quirk in the law. If one of the four at-large councilors in Boston
But didn't he want
leaves,
Rob Gonzalez to be the council president? He would have gotten that.
that's another story. We can get into that if you want. The Michael Flaherty thing is factual, though. If Steve Murphy or any of those counselors at large leave, Michael Flaherty is automatically appointed. He doesn't have to take it, but then they go to the next one, the number six, until they're all exhausted, yeah. And then I guess they'd fill it somehow. But so, you know, the conspiracy theory is that the mayor called the governor and said, don't appoint Murphy because I don't want Flaherty back.
Yeah, I think
back.
I asked you about this once before because it was you or somebody else said to me, well, technically, it's the governor's call. And I'm thinking, well, maybe technically, but I wouldn't be surprised if the mayor got involved in this.
Yeah, it's definitely interesting, you know, and you know, Steve Tompkins, he was a senior advisor to Elizabeth Warren. So there's a little bit, you know, there's a good amount of political capital there. It wouldn't surprise me if Elizabeth Warren told the governor, hey, he's a good, you know, mm-hmm. he's a good employee, sharp guy. You should take a look at him. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's what happens in politics. People recommend each other, you know, and it's political capital. But again, the question is, was there someone else out there that might have had more experience?
Well, it's a tee-up. I mean, the election is it 2014? So it's next year. Right. Year after. So 2 years before he'll be running. Presumably, he'll want the post himself.
You would think. I mean, unless, you know, he moves on to bigger and better things or it doesn't work out for him in the agency and something happens. I mean, Suffolk County Sheriff's Department is not immune to scandal. It's happened many times. We had the female inmate sex scandal a couple of years mm-hmm. back. So
we had that strip searching thing.
That's
you
what I'm
missed
talking.
That.
Yeah, the strip search thing. Yeah.
Oh, really? Because it was decades ago that I thought that strip search thing was.
Wasn't it? Was
maybe
it
there was
the
a
90s?
Second round.
Was it the 90s? Maybe?
Yeah.
I don't know. At any rate, you know that's the point. Is, you know, jails are, you know, they're prone to lawsuits. They're prone to, you know, mistakes like that.
Yep.
You know, corrections
inmate
officers.
Inmate suicides.
It's,
all that
yeah,
stuff.
Inmate suicides. It's a very complex world that
I would hate that.
It's got to be depressing.
I'd be letting half the people go. I'm terrible.
But again, you know, Steve Tompkins, to his credit, he's been operating in that world for quite some years now, 10 years. So he probably, you know, does have a good handle on how things work.
I mean,
over
as
there.
I said, I thought it was kind of refreshingly honest that the governor admitted. I've got you here, Dave. You're the City Hall bureau chief for the Boston Herald. And we've talked about this before on our Friday Weekend Review, but it's certainly all indications point. It's mid-January. Mayor is pretty much back, although he's still at the Parkman House. Am I wrong?
He is, yeah. He's still at the Parkman House.
So he's still in rehab, still goes to rehab every day. I don't know if he's been home at all. He probably has, but all indications are that he's not going to let this job go.
No, I agree with you. And again, I was talking with Edgar out back, and he asked the same thing. You know, I see the mayor almost every day, and I've kind of watched him progress. And
how's he walking?
He can get where he needs to go, but he's walking gingerly.
Is he in pain?
I'm not sure if he has too much pain anymore. I just think it's muscle atrophy and
really?
And age. I mean, he is 70 years old.
That's
and
not old, Dave.
I know it's not old for you, Emily, who still plays tennis, but for Mayor Menino, who wasn't the most active person to begin with, and then he had type 2 diabetes that apparently went undiagnosed for a long time. His body swelled up and it's caused him some discomfort and he's dealing with that now. But I will say that, you know, for a lot of, you know, the past couple of years when you would shake the mayor's hand or look at him, he was very bloated,
puffy,
very puffy. He's not anymore. He's back
his ankles were swollen. He couldn't even wear regular shoes for a while.
That's right. And he's, you know, his hands look
makes
better.
Makes you wonder how long that diabetes went on.
That's what I'm saying. So I think he definitely looks a lot better. And he's progressing. He's getting better. I was worried about him back around Thanksgiving. When we talked last about, you know, but I think that, you know, if I had to put odds on it, I'd say 70-30 that the
still,
guy's running.
Running, even though, you know, he's got, you know, the old cliche of the machine behind him and, you know, he doesn't have to. It's an arduous and tedious, and especially if there's any kind of serious challenge whatsoever. You got to do debates. You got to be on top of your game. You got to make even more appearances than you do normally. It just seems like a huge physical, emotional. And it's like, here, this guy could ride out at the top of his game. He could go do something and make some money.
You sound like Scott Lehigh.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, I agree with you. Everything you just said is true. But I think for Mayor Menino, his, you know, the proverbial 800-pound gorilla, who's going to run against him? And you know, right now it's just Will Dorsina.
Will Dorsina. Yeah.
Will Dorsina, who, you know.
I don't know him. He's Linda Dorsina Forey's brother. She's a state senator. That's all I know about him.
Yeah, he's, you know, he used to run
one other guy.
The Haitian Reporter. He ran some newspaper that's no longer in existence. Yeah. And, you know, the question
isn't
is.
Isn't there one other person?
Not just one other guy. Not that I'm aware of. But, I mean, you know, the question is, will one of the city councilors step up? Will the mayor have a serious challenger? No offense to those other candidates, but, you know, is John Conley going to run against him? Is Mike Flaherty or someone of that?
Obviously not Mike Flaherty, but someone like that. It'd have to be somebody who has the money and the wherewithal and the nerve and doesn't care. You know, about his political future, because it has to be almost like a Michael Bloomberg type, because you expend so much political capital. Look what happened to, Michael Flaherty, and then now I'm blanking on the Asian Boston City Council.
Sam Yoon.
I mean, he was essentially run out of town. He was a very credible, he was a good guy.
But he was smart.
He expended so much political capital. I mean, he came in here one day and he said, I've essentially been blocked from ever getting employment in this city again.
That's what the Future Boston Alliance and Greg Selko and those folks talk about when they talk about the mayor being a Putin-like character. That's what they talk about, is that, you know, people literally get blackballed by the administration if they rub them the wrong way. And, you know, whether or not that's 100% true, I don't operate in those circles, so I haven't been blackballed.
But have you observed it?
I've definitely heard a lot of those stories, like you just told about Sam Yoon, and you know, I've heard stories about contractors that can't get bids. You know, they just get ignored. You know, so, but you know, the fact of the matter is that, you know, the mayor's going to wait as long as he can to make this decision
public. Like June?
Well, I think they have to pull nomination papers, I think, in April.
Oh.
So once those papers are pulled, the mayor's going to pull them if he's going to run, and then people will know whether or not he's running, and then someone will decide whether or not to run against him. And, you know, all the things you said before, if he has a serious challenger, I agree with you, but if it's just the field that's there now, he walks into another term and with very minimal effort.
Mm. I mean, there are still a lot of huge looming issues facing the city. You know, the changing landscape, you know, the downtown crossing, all areas. I mean, even the waterfront, which is definitely, you know, beginning to come around on the waterfront, but it still isn't, you know, connected with the, here, right where we are sitting. Mm. It's like, this is a vast wasteland. I mean, you got the Harvard project, which is stalled, but there's, and you got Jim Davis, who's about to put up, you know, this big complex. There's no way to get here. Now, how did you get here today? I mean, there's no way to get here. Exactly. You have to get in your car and drive over. There's a complicated bus route. If I was going to take a bus or a public transportation from downtown Boston, it would take me an hour and 20 minutes to get here. It's a 6-mile ride.
Well, you could take the Green Line, but that's
it doesn't get
off
here
today.
Yeah. That's not working today.
No.
Actually, it wasn't because of the cold.
I guess you would take the Green Line to somewhere up in Brighton and then take a cab.
Or
a bus.
You take a bus to Harvard Square and then a bus over to, you know, it isn't doable.
I mean,
so there's a lot of, my point is that there are a lot of, you know, huge challenges still facing the city. They're very forward thinking. Not that the mayor isn't forward thinking. And he's got a lot of good people around him. But, you know, it just feels like, you know.
Well, you know, you should have Greg Selko sit here because he could fill your head.
Yeah, what's the name of his group again?
The Future Boston Alliance.
Yeah, I have had Greg Selko on a couple times.
He's the CEO of Karma Loop, and he's a very innovative guy. And
he has told me that the mayor will not even so much as sit down with him and take a meeting, which I think is a mistake. Listen to what the guy has to say.
Yeah, I'm not going to argue with you. I mean, you know, someone like that, he's got his website, Karma Loop, is one of the most successful online retailers in the world. I believe it's in the top 20 as far as clothing retailers online. And he obviously knows something about how the economy works. And he makes a lot of those arguments you make, that the city's doing well, but we could be doing better.
Yeah, in terms of transportation.
Infrastructure.
Infrastructure. Right. You know,
fostering new businesses,
keeping bars open or restaurants open later at night, things that, you know, shut this city down that just don't happen in other world-class cities around the United States, never mind the rest of the world.
Yeah, and you know,
it's part of our charm, isn't it?
The casino thing too is part of the equation. You know, the mayor loves Suffolk Downs because
it's
so detached from the city, though. It's way out there in East Boston, way out, it's partially in Revere. So, you know, some would say, if we're going to do a casino in Boston, let's put it downtown. Mm-hmm. Let's put it on the waterfront. Yeah. Let's put it somewhere where it can become part of the synergy of the city. But that's not something the mayor even really thought about. He just said, nope, Suffolk Downs, that's it.
Yeah. Well, he's probably
and now we're at risk of losing it to Everett.
Yeah. I want to get your input on that because I've got Steve Crosby, who's the executive director of the Gaming Commission, coming on tonight. I mean, he's got 11 bids before him, more mm-hmm. than they thought. You've been following this, which is why I'm asking you about it. More than they thought they were going to get. Each of these outfits ponied up $400,000 just for the privilege of applying for a license, never mind getting
deep
one.
Deep pockets.
That's deep pockets. So, I mean, do you take personalities into consideration? Is it all based on location? Is it based on the looks of the thing, on disrupting traffic, on neighborhood input, or is it all of the above?
I think it's all of those things. I mean, first of all, every single one of those applicants has to strike a local deal with the local community. So East Boston and Revere will have to strike a deal with Suffolk Downs, if that's the place. Same with Everett. And
what do you mean by that?
They have to strike a host community agreement, is what it's called.
And
will entail all the things you just talked about, traffic mitigation. Mm-hmm. What are they going to give for perks to the town? For example, I covered Plainville for years when they built that racetrack, Plain Ridge Racecourse, which is now going for the slot machines. Part of the deal for the town to approve that racetrack was they would give, in lieu of tax payments, every year for like the schools and the fire department, buying fire trucks, things like that. So each community will negotiate
a deal.
Was
it a percentage
like
of earnings? How's
it was basically this. It's a pilot payment,
right,
in lieu of taxes,
okay,
and it's negotiated.
Honest. How did that work out for them?
The racetrack?
No, the town of Plainville.
I would say pretty good. I mean, it's a good taxpayer. I mean, that track does fairly well. I mean, considering the state of racing.
I'd be surprised if it does that well.
It does. It makes money. I mean, they paid their $400,000 to get the slot, so it's making money. And, you know, there are, I haven't followed up on it because I'm no longer down there, but they definitely make money.
Because you know
money.
Me, I'm a big skeptic. I think this whole casino thing is going to be a huge bust. And then in, you know, 8-10 years, they'll all be built and no one's going to go. And then...
Well, back to your original question, I think what Steve Crosby and them will consider is the whole package, but some of the things they mentioned the other night at the meeting was, we want museums, we want theme parks, we want it to be a destination.
Yep,
we don't want
yeah.
it to be somewhere where people just come pull a one-armed bandit and go back to their welfare check and and that's it. You know, they want it to be a true first-class place. Whether or not it'll happen, we'll see.
Yeah,
you know?
We shall see. All right. David Wedge from the Boston Herald, all things City of Boston. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
And Kara Miller is back. Studio 3, what do you got, Kara?
Hey, Emily. So we're going to talk about this image people have of the recent college grad as just waiting tables and, you know, taking their neighbor's dogs for a walk and stuff. And the question is, are people who are graduating from college actually able to find jobs? We're going to look at
it. I'd be curious to know. All right. I'm Emily Rooney.
And I'm Kara Miller. This is Boston Public Radio.